Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha. We've got a lot to talk about on today's show because the NBA offseason, it is here. The New York Knicks have won the NBA championship, and that means we get to pivot fully into the draft, into free agency, into the trade market as next year's Lakers get assembled over the next few weeks. Happy to have you all here. If you've not done so yet, please hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. And don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Jovan, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. We're officially at the off season. It's crazy. It's been 10 months since we started this show and the NBA season started. So it's always a long journey, but a fun one with a quick turnaround here where we got the draft in exactly a week from now. I think we'll have some fireworks around there with a potential Giannis trade, which we'll be touching on today. And then a week later, it's right into free agency and the Lakers having to build a lot to look forward to over the next couple of weeks.
Has it really been 10 months since we started? It does not feel like it's been 10 months since we started this show.
I guess technically eight-ish.
I don't know why. It feels like it was like 2 months ago. Time flies when you're having fun. I guess that's the key.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. All right. We've got plenty, of course, to get into on this show. The Lakers, the most fascinating team of the offseason, so many different ways that they can go, whether they're going to be a cap space team, whether they're going to be an above the cap team, who they bring back, who they don't, all kinds of question marks up there in the air. Of course, we'll be taking your questions and comments as well throughout the show. So make sure you guys throw those into the chat. And we certainly appreciate any of the super chats you guys want to kick in as well. We'll start with the whole Giannis situation, and I think we're going to spend the bulk of our time talking about what if the Lakers could be a third team getting into the Giannis trade talk. But let's begin though with, could the Lakers actually get into the mix for Giannis himself? I know we hear a lot of Milwaukee, Boston Giannis trade, Milwaukee, Miami, maybe a third team getting in. Can the Lakers beat the package that we're hearing from Boston, which would involve Jaylen Brown, or a package from Miami, which would involve Tyler Hero, Jaime Jaquez, Kelo Ware? Have to be another salary in there. Maybe it's like a Nikola Jovic or someone like that, plus draft capital. Jovan, is there a world where the Lakers can find some way to compete with those kinds of offers?
I would say, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and here value is in the eye of the beholder. So you just kind of laid out like three different pathways for Milwaukee to potentially take. So you have the Boston pathway, which is you take on Jaylen Brown. There's also the possibility that they could loop in a third team and reroute Jaylen Brown elsewhere and get assets for that, including potentially the Clippers or someone like that. But for argument's sake, let's just keep it simple and say you can go, we get a bit younger going from Giannis to Jaylen Brown, and we want to try to still be somewhat competitive here, see if we can be like a play-in team with Jaylen Brown as the face of the franchise. We saw the job he just did in Boston as the primary guy, and maybe you can quickly try to retool, and you're not going to be a contender. You might not even be a playoff team, but can you be like still somewhat decent to competitive? That's one pathway. The other pathway is the Miami pathway, where now you're prioritizing more picks and younger players. Tyler Hero is sneakily like not that young, but if you're getting Hero and Jaquez and Ware, you have a younger foundation plus some picks, and you are pushing your timeline back a few years, and you're more focused on like the 20-30 bucks and what that group looks like. Mm-hmm. Or you could go the Lakers path, which the Lakers are maybe the only team that could offer this other than Chicago or Brooklyn, which is just dump the Giannis contract on the Lakers and not take back anything if they so choose. There's also a version where you could do a sign and trade with Austin Reeves. But if they don't want to take on Jaylen Brown and they don't love some of the offers for him in like a three-team deal, or they don't love the Tyler Hero contract and they don't think that's quite enough of a return from a player perspective, and they're just like, these guys aren't really moving the needle for us. There is a way that if they just want to dump Giannis's contract and get the picks back from the Lakers, they can do that. And so you rarely have a situation where you can just dump a player entirely without attaching an asset or without taking something back and also be getting assets back for that. So the Lakers' pitch would be, get off the Giannis contract, get out of the cap hell that you're partly in because of the Dame stretch, because of Miles Turner's contract and some of the decisions you've made over the last few years. And here are three picks. We'll draft the number 25 pick on your behalf. We'll send you two unprotected future firsts, 2031, 2032. I mean, 2033. We could throw in up to, I believe, three pick swaps at that point. If they're trading, because they have up to five pick swaps. So if they're doing two first, they could do three pick swaps and a second. Like you throw all of LA's draft assets at Giannis, and that's the offer. And then you could still keep Austin. You can still technically keep LeBron, depending on where his salary's at that point. And that is LA's pitch to Milwaukee to get Giannis.
Now, I actually think that with the rule changes that we've seen to the draft lottery, that actually makes the Lakers pitch weaker. Because I think we're going to see teams prioritize, not necessarily getting back, you know, just players, but I think these draft pick heavy trade packages are going to become less valuable because teams aren't going to want to completely bottom out. So if you're in Milwaukee, there is actually substantial benefit to getting back players that can help you win games. Now, unless they're getting their own picks back in a deal with Portland, that could certainly matter in this situation. But just generally speaking, when we're looking at trade packages around the NBA, I do think we're going to see teams prioritize, getting back players. Maybe we don't take three first round picks. Maybe it's two first round picks plus a good player that we think can help us be not one of the three worst teams in the NBA, because that actually hurts our draft odds now. Of course, what I see a lot as well, throw Austin Reeves into it, right? Sign and trade Austin Reeves. The challenge with that is the player's got to want to sign there. Does Austin want to go to Milwaukee if Giannis is not there? He may not. And so that's the challenge.
If I'm going to be on a bad team, I'd rather go live in Brooklyn than Milwaukee.
For sure. For sure. I think it's false to just look at it and assume that the Lakers could throw Austin Reeves into a package like that. But let's suspend disbelief, though. Let's say nobody was willing to give Austin Reeves the full max. Milwaukee is. And so Austin says, okay, cool. Well, if you'll give me the full max, I'll go. I'll deal with the cold weather and everything else. Whatever. We'll go make it work. Would that put the Lakers package on par?
On par with
Miami or a Boston package. And the Boston package, to be clear, I do think Jaylen Brown gets routed to a third team. So then the question becomes, what stuff is going from Boston and that third team to Milwaukee?
Yeah.
But is that really the only path to the league? Because I do think three picks, when we're talking about a Miami package that would feature Kelo Ware, Jaime Jaquez, Tyler Hero, plus three picks, including the 13th pick in this draft right now, I don't see the Lakers three picks and we'll just absorb Giannis' salary as being on par with that.
I agree. To be clear, I think Boston and Miami both have better offers. More so saying the hypothetical that, like, if they don't, it really depends how you, because like I probably would not want to take on Tyler Hero. I would love to take on Jaime Jaquez. I would love to take on Kalel Ware. If I'm Milwaukee, I'd be looking at, okay, like these two guys can be potential starters or high level bench guys on whatever the next iteration of the Bucks is. Tyler Hero is kind of in that in between where it's not like a bad contract per se, but I don't love the contract and I'm not quite sure where he fits on a true winning team, just with his style of play. So that's one where I'm a little like I'd almost prefer to reroute him to a third team if I'm Milwaukee. I just don't know where that, you know, what that team is. But you're saying Austin in three picks. It just, again, depends kind of what Milwaukee wants, because I would argue that Austin's not like that much younger than Jaylen Brown, as wild as that is. So it's like I still, as Milwaukee, I'd be looking at guys in early 20s and I'd almost want to reroute Austin somewhere else and see if you could have Austin in that deal be going to a third team and get some assets for that. Because if I'm Milwaukee, my ideal scenario is probably three team with Boston and Portland, and then you get your picks back from Portland, right? So Jaylen Brown gets, Giannis goes to Boston, Jaylen Brown gets rerouted to Portland, Portland sends the picks back to Milwaukee, and then you also get some picks back from Boston, and maybe you leave the situation with like four or five picks for Giannis, and you also have some cap flexibility there. That would be my preference if I'm Milwaukee. I think it's going to be tough to beat that exact potential offer. But if you can't get that, then I would also prefer then, can you leverage Jaylen Brown to get the number five pick from the Clippers, or, you know, picks from somewhere else? Maybe there's a version, you could technically do a version with Miami where Jaylen Brown goes to Miami and Miami sends some stuff back to, you know, Boston and Milwaukee. So it really depends how high they are on Austin, I guess I would say. But if it's like Jaylen Brown and two picks or Austin and three picks, I'd still probably prefer Jaylen Brown and two picks. So the Lakers, like, I think anytime we've talked about Giannis potentially going to LA, it's never been like the Lakers have the best package. It's been the Lakers have this like get out of jail free card of you don't have to take back any salary if you don't want to. And that's the one carrot the Lakers can dangle that no one else really can.
I think also just in order to, and you're absolutely right, they have the ability to just absorb the whole contract. The other thing that the Lakers would definitely, I think, need in this kind of situation would be Giannis saying, I want to be a Laker. And we haven't heard that from him. You know, we heard some talk that he would like to go to Miami. They'd like to go to Boston. We've heard actually the opposite about the Lakers. We've heard he wants to stay in the Eastern Conference. I don't blame him there. So all of this is to say the Lakers getting Giannis, you make the call, you have the conversation, but it's very, very unlikely that that's the way this is good, that, right, this is going to go. So could the Lakers, though, with their potential pretty sizable amount of cap space, then get involved as a third team or maybe a fourth team or a fifth team, depending on how many teams are involved here, as a team that could absorb salary in a trade? I've seen version Lakers fans have been talking about, could the Lakers wind up being the landing spot for Kel Aware? Maybe Milwaukee doesn't actually like Kel Aware all that much and he winds up going to LA. Could the Lakers jump in that kind of a situation using the, I like the term flexibility, Rob Pelinka says optionality, but using the optionality that they've got with all of this cap space, could they jump in as a third team and absorb a salary in a trade?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely scenario here. If the Lakers are involved in a Giannis trade, is they could act as the third team to help grease the wheels. And if there's any unwanted salary on either side, that you just needs to be involved to make the math work, the Lakers could take on a player or two that if Milwaukee doesn't want Jaime Jaquez or Khalil Ware, the Lakers could take back that player and potentially send out an asset to Milwaukee for that player. And it would, you might not like, you, ideally you could just deal with Miami and say, hey, here's an asset for this player. But if Miami doesn't want to do that, and it's like, they'll only give up that player in a Giannis trade, this is a way to kind of work around that and be like, okay, well, sure, if we can't deal with you directly to get Khalil Ware and you're asking for like two firsts for Khalil Ware, maybe we could give up a first to Milwaukee and, or a protected first, whatever, and then get Khalil Ware that way. So that like this to me is, you know, I talked about it last week on here. If I'm the Lakers, my preference is to poach a restricted free agent. That is going to be difficult, though maybe with Walker Kessler and the situation brewing here in Utah, that ends up being more possible than we anticipated as recently as like 24 hours ago. But like that situation aside, it's unlikely they get a restricted free agent. That would just be my preference because most of those guys are in their early to mid 20s. They fit the Luka and Austin timeline. They could be guys who are foundational parts of LA's core moving forward. If you can't do that, by far, the next best roster building scenario is making a trade compared to free agency. If you just look at the free agents out there, with a couple of exceptions in terms of unrestricted free agency, like Ayo Dosunmu comes to mind. Outside of Ayo, you look at the rest of the guys, I'm not really moved by most of them. I view most of them as like high level bench guys rather than starters. And so the Lakers need, I think, a couple new starters here. And to get that, it's either going to be restricted free agency or the trade market. So if you can get involved as the third team in one of these deals, or potentially even OKC is trying to dump some guys, or Cleveland or Orlando or Minnesota, or like some of these teams are trying to get off some money, you can be there as the team that's like, hey, we got all this cap space, and maybe you even get an asset from them. Denver comes to mind as well with Christian Brown or Cam Johnson. So the Lakers can be involved in basically any scenario in which there is a three-team trade or a team needs to get off money. And of course, it's got to be the right player. It's got to be the right price, the right incentive for LA. But I think that's a realistic scenario here.
Yeah, it's interesting because it does have to be the right player. Like we're talking Christian Brown, you'd have to be very convinced that Christian Brown's a long-term fit and that maybe last year was just a blip on the radar. It was an injury-plagued season and that he's actually what he was the previous 3 years, and last year was not really what he is if you're going to commit to 5 years of salary. But perhaps there is, you know, a way that the Lakers pick up an asset, absorb a contract, find a player where they think there's either a motivation to move off of the player in order to facilitate something else, or they value the player differently than what the incumbent team does. If the Lakers say, hey, you know, this guy's a negative value on this team, but on our team, we think we could rehab that value and make him a neutral to a positive value player because he's simply a better fit. Speaking of which, before we move on from this whole three-team possibility, because I do want to talk a bit about the Walker Kessler stuff that's out there right now. I know he's long been connected to the Lakers, but before we leave this, what are your thoughts on Kel Ware? I've seen a lot of conversation on him. Some people really enticed by the potential skill set, the ability to shoot the three, insane catch radius, lob threat, all of that. And then other people going, man, this guy can do all that. He's a rim protector, but he's got DeAndre Ayton's motor. And that is a problem. So where do you ultimately land on Kel Ware as a potential Lakers target?
I'm probably higher on him than consensus. I would give up a first round pick for him if that was a possibility. I would prefer a protected first round pick. And if I'm picking between the three first round picks, I would prefer to give up the first this year and then maybe like the 2033 first and then the 2031 first last. I see the outline of the skill set, and I think there is something to, if we look at recent NBA history, you go through the last 10 champions or so, all of them had a stretch big in some form or fashion. A lot of them had stretch fives, but some of them had Kevin Love in Cleveland, right? And they even went to Kevin Love as a stretch five at times. But you know, he played like 20% of his minutes at the five. Otherwise, it's been the Marc Gasol's. AD had his best three-point shooting run during the Lakers championship. You know, Brooke Lopez, I already mentioned Marc Gasol, but Draymond at the five. Jokic had his best shooting stretch during that 2023 run. Like, you know, Kat and Porzingis and Horford and Chet. And like, you just go through recent NBA history, almost every NBA champion has had some form of a stretch big. So I think a stretch big is a very enticing skill set that when you think about how you match up with Wemby and Chet and Kat over the next few years, having a big who can space out those defenses is important. The key is having a big who can do that, who can also protect the rim, defend, and rebound at a certain level. That's why I'm a little bit lower on guys like Miles Turner or Kristaps Porzingis. With Porzingis, there's also the health element. But Kel Ware might be the rare guy who has, you know, can be a lob threat and can shoot threes and can rebound and can protect the rim and has some defensive versatility. The motor is a concern. I also think he's pretty raw, where I don't know if he's ready to be the starter on a contender this season, maybe like 2 years from now. So it is like maybe more of a long-term play, but I'm open to it depending on the price. Like I wouldn't go more than a first, but if he's there, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. If there was a disagreement in terms of value. So for example, if Milwaukee said, well, you know, we don't like Kel Ware that much, we'd rather have a first, and the Lakers can say, well, we'll give you a first for him. Okay. We like him better than a first simply because of the upside. Because here's the thing, it's difficult to find bigs who can both space the floor and protect the rim. Right. Finding guys who do both of those things can be a bit of a challenge. It's one of the reasons why Miles Turner's name comes up, right? You can typically find floor spacing bigs, but they often aren't rim protectors, or you can find rim protectors who don't space the floor. Kel Ware checks both those boxes in addition to having an incredible catch radius as a lob threat. So you've got that as well. And there's questions about maturity. There's questions about the motor and all of those things. But in terms of the scarcity of how many players actually fit that particular skill set, there's just not many guys out there that can do that. So if you're going to take a gamble on something, that's the kind of thing that I think you want to gamble on with a player like Kel Ware, somebody that has a skill set that is so difficult to find. If you make it work, he's a guy that can fit very, very well with Luka and give you, we've talked about this too, I think the versatility to play many different styles. When we talk about having a guy who could run the floor, be a lob threat for Luka, but also pull, say, Victor Wembanyama out to the perimeter, which I think is becoming an even more, as you mentioned, an even more important skill set. That's a difficult thing to acquire. So that's something that I would be willing to roll the dice on while recognizing that he's not a finished product. But if he was, if he had all the boxes checked, Milwaukee's just taking him, right? Like, this is, they would just hang on to it. And maybe that's ultimately where this goes. But I don't see the opportunity to get a player like this unless he would have some sort of negatives on his ledger. And that's certainly the case with Kelo Ware. But I think the upside is worth the risk. So I'm with you. I would give up a first-round pick if that meant you could land Kelo Ware, because you just might be landing the center with Luka for the next 5 years that gives you the ability to play many different styles of basketball.
And one thing to quickly add to this is I've been working on my center targets list, both via free agency and trade, for my show. And I put together giant spreadsheet comparing all these potential centers who could be available on the trade market and in free agency. And I also compared them to DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes. And one thing that stood out in comparing DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes to those guys was DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes have the highest rim field goal percentage of the entire group. And that's looking at guys like Kessler and Lively, and this is Kessler and Lively from 2 years ago because they both had injury plagued seasons, but Kessler and Lively from 2 years ago, Durin, Allen, Claxton, Ware, like all these guys, Hayes and Ayton are ahead of them in terms of rim field goal percentage. And the reason is because they're playing with Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves and LeBron James. And that, you know, I think specifically Luka with his pick and roll and lob passing ability, but like three guys averaging over five assists and just the amount of playmaking that's there and how easy those guys make the lives of DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes. So I think even when comparing other bigs to those two guys and just like how they would fit with the Lakers, I think you got to give everybody a slight bump in terms of their finishing, in terms of their dunks, in terms of just their true shooting and effective field goal percentage and all that stuff. Like, they're going to get a bump playing with those types of playmakers. So I think that's another underrated aspect here of going from playing with like Tyler Hero and Norman Powell and Davion Mitchell to Luka and Austin and LeBron potentially. I think you're going to see Kelo Ware's efficiency skyrocket.
It's a dream scenario. The Lakers should, for anybody, for any big that has the ability to land in LA, I think they should be number one on the list of potential landing spots for any type of true center, because you're playing with Luka. You're going to be living the good life. I put together just a real simple highlight reel of one particular game. I don't even recall which game it was, but LeBron, Luka, and Austin had, I think it was four or five passes over the course of the game that, I mean, just fell in DA's lap. Easy dunk at the rim. I'm like, this is living the good life in LA. This is what life is like when you're a big man and all you have to do is screen, roll hard to the basket, and you're going to get highlight reel, easy buckets all night long. The Lakers have got to be the top landing spot for any center that has the ability to move and make a jump to another team. Simply because of that, you're living the good life. If you're playing with Luka, you're playing with Austin, you're playing with potentially LeBron James as well. Let's talk about the Walker Kessler situation and kind of how that is very quickly evolving and why there could be opportunity there for the Lakers. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. The link is in the description down below. The World Cup going on right now. Really exciting stuff happening. And I've got a couple of picks here. Luis Diaz got him more than 2.5 goals and assists during the entirety of the World Cup tournament. And then I'm going to go with Cristiano Ronaldo, more than 3.5 goals and assists. Lots of different options here. If you're into baseball, you can go with baseball. You can go even make predictions on football coming up as well. All kinds of things you can get into. WNBA, lots of different options over on Prize Picks. Go check them out. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. The link is in the description down below. Go give them a look. And thank you to Prize Picks for sponsoring our show. All right, so a bit of surprising news that came out last night from Sam Amick, that Walker Kessler does not see eye to eye with the Utah Jazz, that he's not pleased with the way things have gone so far. And not necessarily a surprise in that front because he's a restricted free agent, but the fact that it's to the point where now it's being made public that, hey, Walker Kessler is not happy and he's considering a future away from the Utah Jazz, certainly difficult to create that future when you are a restricted free agent. But Jovan, what's your take on the situation right now with Walker Kessler in Utah? Is there some chance that the Lakers could go land him to be their big for the future?
Yes, I would say some chance. I think that's an appropriate way to frame it. I would not say a great chance. I would not say a good chance. Yep. I would not say higher than a 50% chance, right? But I would say there's some chance. The door feels cracked open right now, depending on the type of offer the Lakers make, whether that is a financial offer and it's just, hey, here's $32, $33, $35 million, and you make Utah sweat it out and they're uncomfortable at that number and they just decide not to match, or a potential sign and trade, in which case you will have to give up some sort of asset, potentially a first round pick. I would be open to that. If we're giving up a first round pick for Khalil Ware, I think Walker Kessler is already better than Khalil Ware and more proven and ready for the moment. So I would easily give up a first round pick for Kessler in a potential sign and trade that would hard cap you at the first apron. One thing I've not seen people discuss that I'm planning on discussing on my show this week, and we can get into it a little bit now if you want, is there is technically a way for LA to go above the cap, keep everybody, and also execute a sign and trade and stay under the first apron. That would depend then on, like, Austin's contract would really matter into this. That's like one way that Austin's contract could matter if you are hard capped. But LeBron's contract, Rui's contract, Luke, you'd probably have to use part of your non-taxpayer MLE on Marcus, unless he's willing to just re-sign at that like 6.3 cap hold. But there is a scenario here where if DA opts out because you tell DA, hey, we agreed to something with Walker Kessler, the second free agency starts, we're doing a sign and trade, he's our center, you're not going to play, DA opts out, goes elsewhere. And then you could maybe dump Vando as well. If you do those two moves, and that would require draft capital, you can acquire Walker Kessler into your cap sheet, stay under the first apron, and now you've added Walker Kessler basically to last year's team in place of DA. You still would have a little bit remaining of the non-taxpayer MLE, the part that, you know, whatever's remaining that you gave Marcus, you'd have like maybe one minimum spot left, and that would be next year's group. So there's a scenario to keep everybody and do that. I feel like I haven't seen that discussed much, if at all, in terms of that type of sign and trade into space, or, you know, cap sheet space, if the Lakers go above the cap. But it is a very narrow scenario where you do need to shed some money, and you also need guys to potentially take a haircut to fit it all in on the Lakers cap sheet. But I think that's a pathway as well, if they want to just like run it back to some degree with most of their free agents.
And that's, I've talked about that a little bit, that's essentially you were leaning into, well, the best free agents are Lakers anyway, so why not keep these guys, their cap holds on the books? We're going to use whatever rights we've got on them to retain them. And that is, as you said, though, that's where we flip from. We've talked a lot about Austin Reeves and his salary not mattering so much in this first year in terms of their spending power. That's only true if they're below the cap team. If they're an above the cap team, his salary absolutely matters, because as you said, you got to stay below that first apron. And if you do accept the player via sign and trade, that will trigger that hard cap at that first apron. So, you know, I hadn't considered Walker Kessler, though, coming in a sign and trade scenario where you also do run it back. You would kind of need to scare DA away, and we would see what he would do there. Maybe even,
and for what it's worth, like John Hollinger at The Athletic, who does a great job, former front office executive, he does a prediction column every year going into free agency that's pretty accurate, and he predicted that DeAndre Ayton is going to opt out. He thinks that DeAndre Ayton is going to get offers upwards of the non-taxpayer MLE, even if it's in a backup situation. So if that's the case, and regardless of the Lakers situation with Kessler, potentially, if it's just like DA is getting more money elsewhere and wants to leave, like that, I think would be a nice scenario for LA. And then at that point, so, I mean, I did a mock cap sheet here, and it would, if we say Austin's at 40-ish, because I think that's the way that this is trending right now. But even if you say 38 to 40, then LeBron would still be a little bit lower than he probably wants at like 25. I have Marcus at 10.5, Luke at 8, Kessler at 30. That all fits if you get off of Vando and DA. So that that is a potential scenario here that that fits under the first apron. And then you're keeping number 25 pick. You have room for one guy for the rest of the non-taxpayer MLE, so about $4.5 million. And then you also have a minimum contract. So that all fits for 14 players under the first apron. There is a scenario in which that could work.
Now, I think a big question will be, what kind of draft capital would you have to give up to move off of Vando? Is there a flexibility to waive and stretch him as opposed to, say, attaching a first to him? Because I do think that while Walker Kessler would be a great fit long-term for the future, if we're talking about running back this team, I still need athleticism on the perimeter. I still need to go add a wing. I still need to go add a guard. You know, there's other things I would have to go do to this team. Yeah. I don't think running it back plus Walker Kessler replacing DA, while I do think if, and it's a big if, Walker Kessler is healthy, I think that would be an upgrade. I don't think that checks enough of the boxes for the Lakers in terms of what would they need to do from here on out. Would we just say, that's it, this team's done, perfect, don't touch anything? No, I think there would still need to be other stuff to do. So how much flexibility would you still have there moving forward would be part of the question. But I love the idea of going after Walker Kessler if, again, you can get him. And right now, Utah is in the advantageous position there, right? They can say, well, two things. Utah could say, first of all, they have the ability to match on him. They can tell everybody else, and I believe they are, that they'll simply match anything. And in doing so, they'll scare away all suitors. Walker Kessler can, of course, threaten to just pick up the qualifying offer and then leave for nothing in the summer of 2027. But the flip side is Utah can call his bluff and say, dude, you just missed all but five games in a season due to injury. Are you really? We put a long-term contract in front of you. It may not be the exact amount you want, but are you really going to roll the dice on staying healthy for 1 year and then leave us for nothing in free agency? Is that really what you're going to do? Or if we put a long-term contract in front of you, are you going to take the security that a $100 million, $90 million deal would give you for your future? I think that's the other piece to this where Utah really has extra leverage in the situation. But if the Lakers were to offer Utah something that they definitely won't want and like, maybe there's a pathway there. I still just think in restricted free agency, Utah holds so much power in this situation, and Kessler's injury history actually, I think, puts even more power into the hands of the Utah Jazz.
That's a fair counterpoint. Again, I think it's unlikely. I don't think it's going to happen, but it seems like for this to come out, I mean, at this point of the offseason, everything is leverage. Everything is a negotiation tactic. So sure, any report or piece of intel has some agenda or motive behind it. And you will see agents and teams publicly negotiate against each other. I think we've already seen some of this with the Lakers and some of the stuff that's come out, depending on you know, who it's been or you know, the mm-hmm. piece of intel or whatever. There's some form of negotiation and leverage hunting going on through the media. And that's just how this works at this time of the year. So I think the most likely scenario remains Walker Kessler remaining in Utah. They are in whatever contract he potentially signs with the Lakers. If the Lakers make an offer, Utah can match it. So Utah is in the driver's seat to retain him, and they could ask for an astronomically high price from the Lakers. If it's like, hey, you want Walker Kessler? We'll sign and trade him to you. We want two firsts. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, two firsts or nothing. And they could draw that hard line in the sand if they so choose. And we know Danny Ainge, it is history with the Lakers, let's say, and that's probably the team he hates the most in the NBA. So I don't think he's going to do the Lakers any favors as well. So I would say more likely than not, he does not end up being a Laker. But if this is like there's some smoke here, if this turns into a fire, then I think the Lakers are in prime position to be one of the teams to capitalize, because there are very few teams that can just take on Walker Kessler in a sign and trade based on their cap scenario or situation.
I got two things here. First of all, your Danny Ainge comment, yeah, accurate, and makes it all the more hilarious that it was Utah involved in getting Luka to the Lakers as the third team, and that they were in the dark for as long as they were, and the Lakers didn't
the 12th hour.
Know. Yeah. Yeah. Right. What the actual deal was. But then the other piece that I've been kicking around is talk about, well, the Lakers suddenly, you know, 24 hours ago, Walker Kessler, the Lakers, like not happening. Now at least seems like it's not likely. That window is at least cracked open a little bit more. We've talked a lot about, well, free agency, the free agents out there, not that impressive. What's the trade market look like? Can they get into a Giannis trade? Oh, that's kind of tough, right? But I think one of the keys to remember is that the NBA is ever changing. It's not static. There's constantly things that are shifting. If you look at the Lakers' two best signings from last year, right? The top two were DeAndre Ayton and Marcus Smart. This time last year, neither DeAndre Ayton nor Marcus Smart was a free agent. Now, at least we had an idea maybe Marcus Smart would get bought out. We had those conversations about that could be happening. But what is available today, right now, could look very, very different a week from now. It could look very different tomorrow. It could look very different once free agency officially begins. So there is, and it's one of the great things about this league, but there is a bit of unpredictability to all of this. And the Lakers, as things shift, what they have given themselves is the ability to react and adjust with the optionality that they have to whatever opportunities do pop up.
Agreed. And that's the tricky part of reporting stuff around this time of year, is that you are getting bits and pieces. Everybody has an agenda. And then there's also the ever shifting nature of this all. So to your point, yep, with DeAndre Ayton, it was pretty quiet. Like he was not, it was more viewed as like an albatross situation, that how is Portland going to get off of DeAndre Ayton's contract? Like no one's going to trade for that. And then all of a sudden they find a way to, you know, they decide to agree to terms on a buyout. It's at a certain number. And he ends up even taking a pay cut off of that to sign with the Lakers. And so a lot of moving parts, a lot can change. Things could change by the end of this show. And maybe, yep, something even came out while we are live right now that we missed, but that's just how things happen at this stage of the offseason. But I will note for the Lakers, like the key is a lot of free agency. In fact, most of free agency happens before free agency technically starts. So over the next couple of weeks, it's got to be figuring it out and seeing how the chessboard is moving and making sure you have your plan A, B, C, D, E, all the way to Z, because especially with how the offseason works now, there's so many things that could pop up. Like we're talking specifically Lakers, but there's 29 other teams that if something pops up for them, there's a ripple effect, there's a domino that could also impact the Lakers and allow something to materialize. So that's why I think for the Lakers, like the biggest thing with this cap space and this flexibility is making sure you're nimble and evaluating everything as it pops up. And if something pops up that's too good to pass up, you have to be ready for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You never know how things shift. One day the Nets are preparing a max offer for Austin Reeves. The next day they're not even giving out long-term contract. Like you never know on the different reporting that's going to be out there and everything that's going around. All depends on where it's coming from and all of that. All right. We're going to spend the rest of the show getting into the chat. We're going to take your questions, your comments. Just need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. We do appreciate them. Let me bring you on back there. We do appreciate them. And we will be right back to take your questions and your comments.
See the light at the end of the tunnel finally. When we get to the finish line, I'm excited to relax a little bit this summer, get out of the house, go have some fun. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks. And so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set. And I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature. And they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously, it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball's in full swing. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here. The NFL schedule's coming out soon. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right. And again, big thank you to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. It was nice to get Jason on today's show, even though he's under the weather, not available to be on the show today with us in the regular part. But hey, he makes an appearance all the same.
Good to see Jason.
All right, let's go to some of the chat questions here. And we do have SC Lakers said, trade 3 firsts and unload Vando for Trey Murphy, then overpay for Watson. It sounds like Denver is trying to offload salary right now, which is not unexpected, so that they can just swear to everybody who will listen that they will match any offer and try to get no one to go near Peyton Watson. And we'll see. Maybe they're successful in that. Fill in gaps, get a center next trade cycle, Lakers 27-28 champs. Where in a trade? I guess let's start with 3 firsts for Trey Murphy, plus you unload the salary of Jared Vanderbilt. Is that enough to give up all 3 of your available first round picks? That would include the 25th pick in this year's draft. So you'd have to select it and then make a trade later once the calendar flips. But would you do that? 3 first round picks plus Vando. So that would offset about half of Trey Murphy's salary. Would you do that deal to get Murphy in LA?
Yes, in a heartbeat. I mean, I would consider 3 firsts for Trey Murphy straight up. And that's probably what it's going to cost. Like, they've been asking for the Desmond Bane package for Trey Murphy. I don't think they're going to get the Desmond Bane package, but I would be surprised if Trey Murphy goes for less than 3 firsts, or like the equivalent of 3 firsts, maybe a really good young prospect plus 2 firsts, something like that. But I think if you ask New Orleans this, they would say they would want an additional asset, in like they want an asset for Vando, then the assets for Murphy. That's where, from the Lakers perspective, I do this in a heartbeat, because I almost view this as you're attaching the asset to get off of Vando, and then you're basically giving up 2 firsts for Murphy, yeah, which I would do easily. So yes, I would do that. I agree with you that Watson is less likely. And like, as I think those have been the top 2 RFAs, Kessler and Watson. Kessler's becoming more likely. Watson's becoming less likely. I think someone's going to talk themselves into Christian Brown. I think the more I've looked into his season and just his situation, I think he had 3 years being an above average 3-point shooter and ascending as a shooter. He shot 43% on threes in the Minnesota series, which, small sample size, but the playoffs are a small sample size. And like, that at least showed you in high leverage situations, he can shoot at a certain level. So I think if Christian Brown is the player he was 2 years ago, which is far from a guarantee, that is kind of in line with the contract that he has. And I think someone will talk themselves into him. So in that case, if someone takes Christian Brown off of Denver, they can easily keep Peyton Watson. I mean, they could technically keep him anyway, but they don't want to pay the second apron. And then where in a trade would just depend on, you know, what's happening with Giannis, if Miami is giving him up, and then, you know, Milwaukee's interest in him, as we discussed earlier.
Should the Lakers be the team that's interested in Christian Brown?
He's not my first choice, and I would want an asset to take him on. I would not just want to take him on for free. But if you exhaust your options, and so, for example, I have a wings list as well. I'd rather have Trey Murphy, of course. I'd rather have Peyton Watson. I'd rather have Jalen Suggs. I'd rather have Andrew Wiggins. I'd rather have Herb Jones, Tari Eason, Derek Jones Jr., PJ Washington. Yep. Then once you get to this part, like, maybe a hot take for me is I'd rather have Christian Brown than Lu Dort. I think Lu Dort is, we've seen him kind of be unplayable in both of these playoff runs for the Thunder, and they always end up defaulting to Alex Caruso or Kayson Wallace or AJ Mitchell now. And it's like, he seems like the odd man out, where I think he's going to be, if he stays in OKC, I think he'll be phased into a bench role and a smaller role overall. I just think his offensive limitations are just too damaging to OKC's offense. So that's maybe my hottest take, is I'd probably rather have Christian Brown than Lu Dort. Like, Lu Dort's obviously a better defender than him, but I think Christian Brown's a better rebounder. He's far more skilled offensively overall as a cutter, transition guy. Like, Lu Dort is very limited.
Is that factoring in contracts, or is that like that,
that's where it gets tricky? It depends what Dort, like, I guess straight up, I'd prefer Brown with the contract. If you're getting Lu Dort on a multi-year, like, non-taxpayer MLE deal, I'd probably prefer Dort. But in like a vacuum, I guess I would say I'd prefer Brown, which I think consensus would be Dort over Brown.
My biggest problem with Christian Brown isn't necessarily what he does on the court. It's the fact that he's under contract for 5 years. And yeah. just if you miss, that's a long time to have negative value on your books if you do miss on him. But he's also just 25 years old. But anyway, as far as waiting to get a center, the more I lean into this, the more I look into the offseason, the more I keep prioritizing the center higher and higher up my list on things that the Lakers need to do. I don't know that it's now, if you can get Trey Murphy, especially if you can shed Vando while getting Trey Murphy, okay, you got that in front of you. You're not going to pass that up. But I do think the center position needs to be a real priority for the Lakers if they have the opportunity to go land a guy that can be their long-term fit. If it's just a stopgap player, that's a different situation. But if you can get the guy that you think is going to be the guy at the five with Luka for the next, whatever, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever you want to project out to, I think that's got to take some priority for them. I don't think that's something where we can, I'm in general against kicking the can down the road any farther. We have kicked that can far enough. It is dent to hell at this point, but I especially don't want to see them kick the can down the road and say, well, we got a wing this year. Maybe next year we'll get a center and then try to figure some things out. I think you got to check multiple boxes this summer.
And isn't the obvious play here just pay Kessler? And if you walk away from yeah. the offseason with a quartet of Luka, Austin, Trey Murphy, Walker Kessler, that's a pretty good quartet for the future, right? I mean, for the now as well, but like sure. that is a quartet that I think has a 4 to 5 year window at least.
If you feel like there's a chance to get the Jazz to blink on that for sure. Will the Bucks need to shed players if they take the Heat's offer? And can we get some of those players like Kevin Porter Jr., Bobby Portis? So Kevin Porter Jr. has a player option, and he's actually somebody kind of to keep an eye on there. We'll see what he ultimately decides to do on that. I believe he's a pretty good chance. He's a June 29th player option guy. Most guys are. I can double check in just a moment. And then Bobby Portis, there's been a lot of talk that Bobby Portis will probably hitch a ride with Giannis to whatever team trades for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now, that does complicate things in terms of salary going out and all of that. And it's not definite, but it's just something to keep an eye out for that I think has been out there a bit, that Bobby Portis could wind up also going out in a Giannis Antetokounmpo trade. I don't mind either of those players if they're in kind of reserve roles, especially with Bobby Portis and his ability to space the floor. So maybe there'd be an opportunity. Maybe that's how the Lakers get involved as a third team, would be absorbing a salary of, say, Bobby Portis if wherever he was going in the Giannis trade didn't actually want him. That's a player the Lakers could jump in on.
Yeah, looking at Milwaukee's cap situation, they have 13 players technically under contract, but there are five player options with KPJ, Gary Trent Jr., Taurean Prince, Gary Harris, and Jericho Sims. They also have a non-guarantee for Pete Nance, and then they have a team option on Andre Jackson Jr. So basically half of their roster could hit free agency and they could have some real flexibility there. So they can take on multiple players and just replace some of these player options or team options with the guys that are incoming. So they don't need to send anybody out other than making the math work on the incumbent team's side. So, but certainly, I mean, KPJ, he's making $5.4 million next year with the player option. I think he's worth more than that. I think some team will talk themselves into him at least double that. Bobby Portis, I'd be interested in. I think he's definitely a bench player compared to being a starter, but he's got two more years left, 14.5, 15.6. I think as a stretch, like it wouldn't be your starting stretch look, but having a bench look where you can have a stretch big, that would be interesting and maybe something of a compromise for LA. So I'd be interested in him. I'll find a way to get him.
Sure.
But
yeah, I'd keep
him. I think for sure. I would keep him too. But
KPJ, I did double check. He is a June 29th guy, which is most of the option guys are June 29th, which is quietly a really important date on the NBA calendar. You know, we focus a lot on the draft coming up on the 23rd and then, of course, the 24th. And then we've got free agency kicking off on the 30th. June 29th, that's the drop dead date. It can happen before that, but that's the drop dead date for all of those options, for most options. There are some that are earlier, but for guys like DeAndre Ayton, Marcus Smart, Austin Reeves, they have to decide on their player options by June 29th officially. And then the Lakers also have till June 29th to decide on the team option on Nick Smith Jr. So another important date on the NBA calendar, just to keep an eye on. We'll go here. Said, get Jaylen Brown for Austin Reeves and picks, then go get Io as the starting shooting guard. Well, there is already word, and this was from Jake Fisher's piece, that Io Dosunmu and the Wolves have already started negotiating on a new deal. No surprise. Look, the Wolves really can't afford to lose Io Dosunmu with the unfortunate injury to Dante DiVincenzo and what they gave up to get Io. So I wouldn't expect him to leave the Wolves, but I would love to see him on the Lakers, especially in this type of a situation. If you told me that the Lakers could turn Austin Reeves into Jaylen Brown, absolutely. I would do that in a heartbeat if I could. Again, have to be a sign and trade. So you'd have to sort that out, obviously, with Austin Reeves. But sure, if you can get Jaylen Brown, I'm not going to say no to going and getting Jaylen Brown. That would be fantastic. I don't think that's particularly likely in this scenario, though.
I agree. I think it's unlikely that you're able to pull off both these things because Jaylen Brown's making $57 million next year. So if we talk through, let's say the Lakers are going the cap space route and Austin's making the 20.9 cap hold, though I forget, would his, it would have to be a sign and trade. Would his outgoing salary be the sign and trade or would it be the 20.9? I guess it doesn't really matter for the Lakers, but if you just take the cap hold off of the 20.9 and replace it with the 57, you're blowing past that 20.9 and you are now going, $36 million into your cap space. So if with Austin on the cap hold and the like normal cap projections, they're at about 48, 49 million in cap space, you'd have about $13 million left. And that's with losing LeBron, with losing Rui, with losing Luke Kennard, you would still have that $9.4 million room exception, which you could use to potentially re-sign Marcus or Luke if you so choose, but you would not have the flexibility to sign Io. Now, if DeAndre Ayton opts out, that's a different story. That opens up an additional 8.1. If you're able to trade Jared Vanderbilt or some combination of Jake LaRavia and Dalta Connect, you can open additional space, but I think to pry Io out of Minnesota, it's probably going to take a pretty aggressive offer. I think anything in the high teens to low 20s, they're going to match that. And now maybe the Lakers could pitch him on being a starter, and maybe that's more enticing for him than being likely a bench player in Minnesota, though with DiVincenzo out, maybe he is the starter full time. I think that's probably how it goes. So it just gets a little complicated there of finding the space to actually add Io into it. It would take some maneuvering for LA. That's possible, but far from guaranteed. So certainly you could do Austin sign and trade plus some amount of picks for Jaylen Brown, and that would work. But I think it gets tricky to then add another player probably making in like the low to mid 20s if you are able to pry them. Because Io could make less than that, but I think that's just less to stay. For him to really go, I think you have to overpay a bit.
You'd almost find yourself a scenario where you'd have to sign and trade for Io Dosunmu in order to pay him. But the other option that we've talked a bit about, but if it was the difference between, say, getting Io or not, you could always waive and stretch Jared Vanderbilt. It's not ideal to have $5+ million in dead money on your books for the next 5 years, which is what the end result would be. But if you're getting a player like Io, could you say, I don't know, let's say you pay Io $20 million, and then you just consider you're really paying him $25 million, right? That's essentially what the hit is on your books because you'd have that dead money from Jared Vanderbilt. Maybe getting that upgrade from Vando to Io, getting him on your roster may be worth that kind of, you know, the pain that you would have to take there. But again, it very complicated situation, unlikely to happen. But if you could find a way to walk out of this with Jaylen Brown and Io Dosunmu, be pretty excited, I think. Somebody with a username at Trade for Kessler said, get LeBron, Luka, Reeves, Marcus, and Rui in a room and tell them we're making a run at Kessler and Watson to take less. And at worst, we get Herb and Robinson. Okay. So when we're talking about free agent contracts, I do think, you know, if they're operating as an above the cap team, Austin's salary matters. If they're operating as a below the cap team, it doesn't matter. If you're making a run at Kessler and Watson, I'm assuming they're below the cap team and they're using free agency to do that rather than it could be via a sign and trade though. But I think the key here is LeBron. And I've said this a bunch. I don't have any problem with LeBron saying, hey, if I'm going to take less, I need to know why. I need to know what we're doing with that money. if you go to LeBron and you say, hey, LeBron, we need to take $25 million, but if you take $25 million, that means we're adding Walker Kessler, right? Or we're adding Peyton Watson or whoever. That, I think, is an intriguing scenario. That's where LeBron's going to be willing to do that. If you go to LeBron and say, hey, LeBron, we really decided we want to give Luke Kennard $30 million. So we need you to take less money. That's probably going to get a different response, right? So I think I don't have an issue. I know it's it's crazy, but
we'll always have games one and games two of the Houston series.
Exactly. Exactly. Game one and game two of Houston. We think that's what Luke Kennard really is. So we're going to pay him $30 million. I do. That's the scenario that I don't have a problem with. And if that means getting other guys in on it, I think LeBron would be more receptive to something like that than, say, Rui, right? Who this would be, how many other opportunities is Rui going to have to get a big contract? Has Rui made, he's made plenty of money, no question, but this could be a moment to capitalize for Rui. So is he going to take a bunch less so the Lakers can go sign somebody else? That would be, I think, more a LeBron conversation than a Rui conversation or somebody else. And again, I'd be saying the same with Austin Reeves if it weren't for the fact that his cap hold is less than what he's going to get paid. So it's probably not going to matter what Austin makes or doesn't make as long as they're below the cap team.
Well, I want to just let's suspend reality for a moment here and walk through this. So I have so many follow-up questions here. Are you making a run at Kessler and Watson, or are you making a run at one of the two? Because there's a big difference there in terms of you don't have the cap space to sign both Kessler and Watson. I think you would need at least $55 million in cap space just for those two guys specifically, to say nothing of LeBron, you would need to spend cap space on Marcus and Rui. So, I mean, in this scenario, you're basically, you would need to find a way to generate more cap space, which you could do with getting off of DA, getting off of Vando, getting off of Jake and Dalton, some combination. Like, you can get to the cap space. That is possible. But then if you sign Kessler and Watson to all of your cap space, you are now turning around and looking at LeBron, Marcus, and Rui and saying, one of you is going to get the room exception for $9.4 million, which is less than any of you are worth. And then the other two guys are going to be minimum guys. So I think, you know, for Marcus at that point, you would have rather just stayed on your player option. It wouldn't make sense to opt out and then become a minimum guy. And then Rui's not signing a minimum contract. I don't think LeBron's signing a minimum contract in LA. So it's like,
or the room exception.
I know. And then, I mean, you included Luka here. So that, is Luka maybe like restructuring his contract to take a pay cut? Like,
which you can't do.
I think there's so many hypotheticals here that would not happen. So for that reason, like if it's one of the two, now you still have a portion of your cap space. It's still pretty tricky where you're now saying, Rui, can you take 12 instead of 18 or something like that? Marcus, can you take a little bit less? And then LeBron, we still don't have a lot for you. Like it just gets tricky where I do not see that happening.
Agreed. Last one we'll get to here before we got to run. Said a sign and trade for Kessler would cost us 2 firsts minimum, not 1 first, in my opinion. That said, I'll still pay that premium for him. It'd also be for us trading for Ware or drafting Chris Senek as alternative answers. So my question would be, what are you signing and trading Walker Kessler at? Like, what does his contract look like? If you're telling me it's 2 firsts plus you're going to pay Walker Kessler $40 million. No, I'm out on that. If you're telling me it's 2 firsts and Walker Kessler's getting a reasonable salary, if he's getting 25, something like, okay, all right. You know, I can get there on something like that. And then as far as trading for Ware, I'm in. If it's a first round pick, if you can do something there. I do think there's going to be some interesting players in this draft class, specifically bigs, that'll probably be there around 25. How ready to go will they be day one? I think that's certainly a question, but there could be some options for the Lakers at 25. I still lean towards, if you can get a top 6 or 7 rotation player to trade the pick, if you can turn it into that, simply because I need the certainty, because you've missed on 2 first-round picks, your last two, you don't have the luxury of missing again. The best way to turn that pick into rotation players to get a guy who already is. And so I still lean towards that if the right deal is there.
I agree with everything. I mean, I think for Kessler, It also, and I'm going to quote you here because you're a big opportunity cost here, opportunity cost guy. Like, I think the opportunity cost is what matters here. So the Lakers, if you are running the front office, like you have your big board of your, and you look like the scene from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and you got all like your big board with all the different scenarios and all the different rankings and guys that you have there. And so like there is a scenario in which I would do Kessler for two firsts if it's either a great deal or even if like the alternative is just running it back or it's going with like a minimum center or something. I would prefer to just go for it and do the Kessler trade, but it really depends what the alternatives are. And that's where the Lakers, again, I will continue to repeat myself, need to do their due diligence over the next 2 weeks. They need to turn over every stone and see how can we get Kessler? How can we get Durin? How can we get Lively? How can we get Ware? Explore all these options, see what the costs are for each guy. And then based on the potential contracts or the potential draft picks you have to give up, then you rank those options in you know, based in reality rather than just the fantasy of like, this is what this guy's worth or this is what we would give up. Like once you actually know this is the asking price, then you have to make those tough decisions and rank them and figure out what's the best option for you. So there are certainly scenarios in which I would go as aggressive as two firsts for Kessler. It would not be my preference. I'd rather just sign him outright, keep my picks. Sure. I'd rather give up one first. But if the alternative is like DeAndre Ayton as your starting center, running it back to some degree, I would much rather just go more all in for Kessler because I think the Lakers, they need to have some urgency here. That's one thing I'll continue to reiterate as well. Like this is not kicking the can down the road, one more year, two more years, gap year, transition year. Need to go for it now. So if that's the best option, then I would be open to that.
That aluminum can, it has seen better days. It is all beat up at this point.
It is, yeah. It's cracked in half almost.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for today's show. If you gave a super chat and we didn't get to it, I will save them. We'll put them on a future episode. But we do appreciate all of you. Again, if you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, please do so. If you already subscribed, hit the like button as well. Thank you, everybody. Jovan, great show. Appreciate you. And I believe we're aiming for Friday for our next show, right?
Yes, Friday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We will see you guys then.
All right, everybody. Till then, see ya and stay safe.